Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Genuinely Grace on this, just very unusual day in the UK, the day after the Queen passed away. And it's just very odd, isn't it? It's a really odd feeling. I was hearing somebody on one of the news channels asking about the mood, where there's people gathering and everything, and asking, you know, is it sadness? Is it celebration? Is it a mix? And they said, yeah, it's absolutely a mix. And I think a lot of people kind of feel that way. There's often, you know, there's a huge sadness, but there's also a celebration of life, isn't there? So, yeah, I guess there's a million emotions that are going to be uncovered over the next period of time. And I don't know quite how that's going to affect all kinds of things, really. It's such a thing. It's such a massive thing. Those of you who are listening who are not in the UK, I think our Queen was hugely important in so many countries, of course. But if you're not in the UK, and you may not have a sense of quite how many layers, you know, there are to this, really, because I doubt very much whether there's anyone listening to this podcast for whom the Queen hasn't always been the backdrop to their life, always, you know, from the moment they're born. It's a thing, it really is. I think there's still a little bit of shock as well for a lot of people. I found one little quote that I've always noted that Queen Elizabeth said. She said, "It's worth remembering that it's often the small steps, not the giant leaps, that bring about the most lasting change." I thought that's a great quote to have on your legacy, isn't it? The small steps, not the giant ones, that make the most lasting change. That feels very relevant for us, on this podcast. It's been a very interesting week for me. At the beginning of the week, I did an interview on talk radio, talk TV, and the producer called me and asked if I'd do this. It was quite last minute, and it was ridiculously late, in a kind of early hours show. So I got everything set up, because I was doing it from home, so I got my whole little setup ready. And then there was the most massive thunderclap, yes, thunderstorm. I don't know if it was where you are as well. It felt like it was especially for me. Well, it was the night before Liz was elected. Liz Truss was elected, wasn't it? And somebody said there was a thunderclap exactly the same the night that Boris was elected. So it took out the whole internet. So the whole internet went down. And then I had to do this talk TV interview on my phone. But it was very interesting. It was all about sobriety. I don't think that I convinced the presenter, Petrie Hoskin. I don't think I convinced her at all. But you know, as somebody on the Sober Club said, just sometimes it's just the seeds being sown, right? It just is sowing the seeds that might make a difference. And you never know. There might have been somebody watching that program who just kind of thought, oh wow, well, that's just sowed a little seed. And I think that's really what it's all about. So as the Queen Elizabeth said, it's worth remembering that it's often the small steps, not the giant leaps, that bring about the most lasting change. I think we have to hang on to that sometimes. The other really important thing to say, of course, after this ridiculously massive emotional time in our lives, is people think of alcohol. I'm absolutely convinced that over the next 10 days, there is going to be article after article about, you know, what to drink on, I think they call it a national day of mourning, don't they, on the day of the funeral or the bank holiday that they create. What we should drink, what we should be drinking to toast the Queen, what the Queen would have been drinking, and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And I just really urge you to keep out that drama, really, because it's always been interesting to me that we think that alcohol is what helps us to celebrate and be really happy. And we also think that alcohol helps us to pay respects. And we think that alcohol helps us to feel relaxed or helps us to take the edge off something sad. And of course, it's all BS, every last bit of it. You know, the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. We're just finding different ways to either seek pleasure, seek some dopamine, or to numb out from it all so that we don't have to think about it. So I'd really urge you to not buy into all of that absolute drama that I do believe is going to be coming along. This week's guest obviously was recorded a little while ago, so we don't make any reference to it in case you think we're being disrespectful. We were having a good old chinwag, and it was at the end of last week. And I'm just so thrilled to bring you this guest. Susan is the creator, the founder, the editor, the amazing woman behind Hola Sober. She's going to tell you all about it. Honestly, I've found my new best friend. She is just so fabulous. This is quite a long chat, but I really hope you'll find it interesting. And after we had finished our interview, we agreed that I'm going to write regularly for the mag. So in the next magazine that comes out on Sunday the 11th of September, there's an article from me, and there's going to be lots more stuff that I'm going to be doing with the magazine. So enjoy the interview. My guest is Susan Christina, who is founder of Hola Sober, which is just the most fantastic magazine. I just love it, Susan. Honestly, I couldn't believe it. When I opened up your email originally and I saw this mag and I kind of clicked onto it, honestly, I thought I'd done it. What I mean by that is, it's exactly the magazine that I would have created. I just thought, hold on a minute. This is all my shtick. I love it.
Well, what that absolutely fills me with joy. And I tell you why, because when you say you opened it and you felt that euphoric sense of, wow, you know, I'd have done this.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was reaching for, because I, you know, I don't ever want us in the sober space to feel disenfranchised.
No,
and
exactly.
you and I can go find a magazine about bloody fly fishing if we so choose in
exactly.
this moment.
Exactly.
Henceforth, Hola Sober is for the you and I's of this world,
totally.
Who are quite frankly bloody fabulous.
Absolutely. Totally. Well, look, we'll talk about the mag in a minute. Let's just talk a little bit about you. Tell me a little bit about your background. You're in Spain, hence the title of the mag. But obviously you're originally from Ireland. So just take us back and tell us a bit about your story and where the sobriety piece fits in.
Sure. You know, I'm Irish. Obviously, I'm not a native to Spain, but I have lived here for 8 years, and we were in France for 10 years before that. So I'm gone from Ireland 20 years. And I'm that sort of classic situation of, I think the Americans sometimes call it the grey drinker.
But the truth is the
matter. Yes, absolutely. The truth is the matter is I was doing a bottle every single day, but the outside world didn't know. So I was that professional that went out every single morning, did her job, allegedly high functioning, whatever the bloody hell that actually means.
Well, actually, I've heard it called high bottomed, I wish.
Absolutely.
I was
indeed.
Allegedly high-bottomed.
Yes. Having been through the menopause, I don't know where my ass actually is. So thank you for the compliment. But indeed, in terms of going out every day, I had three boys, and I often believe I drank at parenting. I drank at that mother load of full-time professional and having children, trying to smile at the school gate, oversee homework, while at the same time trying to run a professional career and try and get up the ladder and make something of myself. And I think I drank at that. I think that there was certain, if you like, internal insecurity, and there was anxiety, and there was that need to perform and look good and look perfect, when in fact I wasn't, and my parenting wasn't perfect, and my professional life wasn't perfect, and I was holding it all together by a thread in some ways, but nobody knew. You know, here's the big secret in the kitchen that we harbor. And somebody said to me some time ago, but like, how the hell did you go out every day and do your job and travel and make the decisions you made and come in and drink a bottle? And I truly describe it as simply as this. I came in, I put down my bag. I went to the kitchen. I opened the fridge. I opened a bottle of wine. I put it on the counter, chopped vegetables, one glass, threw them in the pan, two glasses, got everybody to the table, third glass, fourth glass, having a conversation, fifth glass, dishwasher is full. Sixth glass, I'll take it to bed, Janie. That's where I'm going with my sixth glass. Suddenly, in there, in the fabric of one evening, I have supervised homework, followed up my work emails, had a conversation with my husband, and consumed a bottle of wine, neatly sandwiched in among the day-to-day running of a family, yet waking up at 3 a.m. filled with shame, filled with that anxiety of, what did I promise them last night? Did I say I'd take them to the playground? Did I say I'd take them swimming? What did I say to my husband? All of those internal dialogue conversations that were buzzing in my head. And then falling back to sleep and the alarm goes off, getting up, doing it all over
all
again.
All over again, yeah.
Pressing repeat, learning nothing. Yes, yes. Believing I'm on top of my game. The world believing I'm on top of my game. And it came to a point whereby I worked in the drinks industry. I made decisions at a global level about a spirits portfolio.
Oh, did you? And interesting.
Yeah, yes. Yes, I did. Mm. And had gins, vodkas, all of it, an entire spirits portfolio, was the marketing communications manager for them from Shanghai to San Francisco and markets in between.
Yeah.
Had billboards all over Europe, did it, you know, knew how to get it into your trolley, knew how to make you believe that you were buying sun, sea, sex, sand, all of it, made you believe that 14 botanicals made you sophisticated.
Made you glamorous. Machine. Yeah,
yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And yet, inside, great irony, didn't drink spirits, was a wine o'clock woman, thought that was, you know, almost sophisticated chic and made me, I don't know, somehow more fabulous, which is complete bullshit. Mm. And I often get quite angry in sobriety at myself. Having bought into the messaging, I bought into all of it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, something I talk about a lot. I mean, your story is very familiar. Apart from working in the drinks industry, it's exactly the same as my story, literally exactly the same. My drinking also really ramped up, you know, when the kids were young. As you say, I could easily pack in a bottle of wine. So our stories are very similar. And I went through a phase where I just could not get my head around how I could be a relatively intelligent person and hold stuff together and not grasp that the emperor wasn't wearing any goddamn clothes. But of course, we have to realize, don't we, that our culture does not want us to, well, as you say, you were part of the marketing with the work that you did. And our culture does not want us to see beneath this veneer of gloss, because, you know, what the hell? And it goes back, it's so ingrained in us. It's the marketing, it's the limiting beliefs, it's the whole rite of passage. Oh, well, when you get to a certain age, you know, if you want to be attractive to, you know, other people, you have to drink or whatever the hell. It's so ingrained. It's really frightening. And we have to be kind to ourselves, because, you know, it ain't our fault that we couldn't see it, right?
No, it isn't our fault. But, and, you know, here's the deal. I think that, you know, when I get angry at myself, I do exactly that. I say, Susan, let yourself off the hook and take the butcher's hook out of the back of your neck. But I also do believe that, you know, and I don't want to sound like some, you know, rampant feminist, but I do believe we were targeted. Now,
oh, 100% women were targeted. Yes. Oh, 100%. Yeah, I wrote a piece for this for a mag not that long ago, where we were talking about the link between menopause and alcohol. And they are not happy bedfellows, that's for sure. But we were talking about how, you know, years and years ago, certainly my mum would not have come up against this stuff. It would have been a case of, you know, a baby sham, you know, a couple of times a year, maybe
Avocar, whatever the hell that even is, that sort of hideous custard kind of drink at Christmas. A snowball, that's what they called it. A snowball at Christmas.
Yes.
You know, and then everyone knew someone who had a granny or an aunt, yes, who had, you know, the odd sherry, one too many. But it, yeah, was nothing like our culture. You know, the whole Ladette thing came in, didn't it? And the alcohol industry, without any shadow of a doubt, targeted women. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
It's actually shocking.
And a vast amount of money went in that direction, because when we come back from it, when I sit back from it, I'm not in the drinks industry anymore, but when I come back from the edge, and I never heard anybody in any meeting ever say anything about targeting women. And I would also like to say that people in the industry are really good people doing a really good job. Unfortunately, they're peddling a drug. They're peddling a highly addictive substance. But as you rightly say, our moms and our grandmothers didn't go through this sort of, if you like, targeting on the back of our back. That, you know, we on an Excel sheet are a dollar. We're a dollar sign. So they set somewhere and decided to go after women because we weren't buying enough and we weren't drinking enough. And I think that it goes back even further to the point whereby, you know, we sadly, I suppose in some ways to make ourselves feel equal to men, I certainly felt if I could drink like the boys, well, then I could be equal to them.
Well,
that
definitely happened in the workplace, didn't it? I mean, yes. I've never had a, in inverted commas, you know, real job, because I have always been kind of in the media. But I have lots of girlfriends who've told me that it was absolutely expected of them to drink, you know, in the boardroom or you know, of a Friday or whatever. It was expected of them, and if they didn't, they were really frowned upon. They couldn't possibly be part of that business if they didn't, you know, roll up their sleeves and drink to the same level as the guys.
Absolutely. And I mean, as a woman, I didn't go to the 19th hole on the golf course and do my business there. It was done in a bar. And, you know, we went for drinks on a Friday night together. And as a team, you went for drinks. Mm. And the thing about it is often you had conversations with leadership and upline in a bar with alcohol on board. And that sometimes, believe it or not, was part of the entire culture in which you found yourself working in. Yeah. Therefore, if you were Mary down the back, saying, no, I don't drink, I'll have a sparkling water. Well, Mary stayed down the back. Mary never got on because she wasn't part of the culture and part of the team moving forward. And that was, if you like, an invisible thing that we as women had to involve ourselves. But I also believe we ourselves as women, we did, and I speak for myself when I say this, I rendered myself powerless every single night when I took a glass of wine. I didn't need a man in a suit to do it for me. I bloody well did it all by myself. And that's the piece that really pisses me off. And that's the piece that drives me every single day. That we as a body of women, we don't know that we can go and protest on the street. We can do whatever the hell we like. But if we're then going home having a glass of wine, exactly, well, guess what, my love? You're giving up all your bloody power.
100%. To actually,
you know what I mean? When we harness ourselves, I certainly know that the most frightening prospect for any body of men is a group of powerful women that are completely standing in their power, remembering
authentic and absolutely know themselves. Because from that place, apart from anything else, we're much kinder, we're much nicer, but we absolutely know how to set boundaries.
We do, and we take no crap, Jaylee. We don't take crap. So in other words, sometimes when we're drinking, well, I certainly feel when I was drinking, I was not as good as a parent because I was constantly compromising in case I said or did something last night. I wasn't going to go at them for not tidying their bedroom. Whereas I tell you, sober Susan, you don't tidy your bedroom. Bloody Nora, you know all about it.
Yeah.
Similarly, with people in our world, family, friends, we don't take crap. Because we didn't talk shit last night. We know exactly what we did last night. We know what we said last Tuesday, and we know what we said at the family barbecue. So if you step on my toes as a sober warrior, I'm more aware of my own personal value. So I'm not actually going to let you do that to me. And that, both in our private lives, but in our professional lives, that stands to us. That sort of, if you like, that sober empowerment is real. It's not
it
some
really
bullshit.
Is, yeah.
It's
real. I had a really interesting conversation with a client a little while ago, and her she had a really huge concern actually about all of this, because she was ditching the booze. She'd been around the block a bunch of times, but she was really getting on board with it. But her big fear was not being accepted at work. And because, again, big drinking culture, complete sober shaming going on whenever anyone was, you know, pussy enough not to have to want to drink or whatever the hell. So she was really nervous about it. But she knew she was going to push through, and she did. And then she came back to me and she said, "You won't believe what happened. There was a kind of works event, and one of the women got, you know, hideously drunk. It was all very difficult and embarrassing and awkward. Obviously not there the next day." Well, clearly, I mean, how much bloody, you know, workplace, you know, how much money is lost to hangovers. But she said her boss actually called her in and said, "I really, you know, admire you and your sort of sobriety. And I wonder if you'd have a word with this other person." It's like, oh my God. She had no idea that A, he'd noticed, B, he was impressed, or C, they might even see that potentially she could shine a light on somebody else. So, you know, you have to stick to your guns, right, in all of this. But how ridiculous if this is still going on now to the same extent.
Well, you see, I think that's what I find shocking, you know, in the cold light of day. It's 2022, and we live in a world whereby for decades, centuries even, it's been part of every event. It's part of the family. Yeah, it's part of the day-to-day vernacular, right? So we allegedly are the ones out of step. This is what I find hugely crazy, that while I was in the power of a bottle of wine every night, I know exactly what I drank every week, 9 bottles a week. One every day, 1.5 on a Saturday, 1 on a Sunday. I'm married to an engineer, so I know exactly what I drank. 9 bottles a week. So therefore, I am allegedly out of step now because I'm not drinking. Well, I was allegedly in power and in step while I was putting away 9 bottles a week. Like, that in itself is so screwed up, right?
Yeah,
but this is where I think the underbelly of women and communities and sobriety finding their voice and being less afraid. We need to be unafraid. You know, I'm not saying that we need to go out there and start bashing drums like evangelists. But we need to be unafraid, because here's the deal. The choices we've made as women are healthier for us in every possible way, hormonally, and alcohol, as you know, is a shit show.
Exactly.
Alcohol is a toxin in our body, contributing to depression, anxiety, and reducing days in the workforce.
I was just about to say, just to chip in there just for one second, that is the other thing that I have been utterly shocked, really, really shocked in the last few years, that a huge percentage of my female clients are on antidepressants. And when I ask them, you know, do you believe you are clinically depressed? Of course not. They say, of course not. Of course I'm not. I just went through a really shit time with my kid or with this or with that. And, you know, oh, or how was my marriage was breaking up or whatever the hell, you know, stuff, life.
Life.
I'm not decrying it. You know, maybe it was a really terrible time. Maybe there was a huge anxiety, huge stress, but shoved on antidepressants, been on them for years. Medical profession seemed to be not very quick to want to reduce. But, you know, really important piece, never asked about their drinking. So bottle of wine a night, let's medicate on top of the medication. It's absolutely rife. You know,
it is.
Sorry, I interrupted you there, but
no. But here's the point. It's very easy for a medical profession to just write a prescription for an antidepressant rather than ask the difficult question. Yeah. The difficult question is, Susan, what are you consuming every week? Not just what your food you're eating, but what alcohol limits are you putting on your body? That's a difficult question, because as a doctor, you then have to do a follow-up. Far easier to say, there you go, take Prozac, take whatever, not ask the difficult question, which is not the fault of the medical profession, who are underfunded, overworked, and don't have enough time to deal with patients. That's government's problem.
And they don't know what to do with grey area drinkers.
That's it. They don't know where to signpost. No, they don't. And here's the point, and this is what I also feel strongly about, is that I didn't look like I had a problem.
Yeah,
so when I enrolled in an online sober school, which I did, I went to Kate B, and that's how I found my way out of a black hole. Nobody knew. I did tell my team. I felt it was important. But the point was that nobody outside of that, nobody knew. Nobody suspected. No one had a bloody clue, right? So I was making a decision on Friday to spend X amount of money and hire this and hire the other, a bottle in. And then on Monday, I was doing online sober school at 6 a.m. in the morning before I started work. Nobody knew. So that's how crazy, because why? Because again, it's the same bullshit. We are told that you and I need to be down an alley drinking sherry out of a brown paper bag. We need to be
destitute. Before we can be helped. Yeah.
Our husband needs to have left it, and our children need to abandon us because we're horrible human beings before we even constitute somebody who requires intervention, a discussion, or a meeting with a doctor.
Yeah.
That is part of the problem. So we are walking around addicted to an addictive substance, completely in danger of ending our own life at 3 a.m. in the morning, filled with self-loathing and darkness and not being able to go on anymore and can't face ourselves in the morning or can't face our husband, which is a real danger period at 3, 4 a.m. in the morning for so many women.
It is,
hormonal explosions, hangovers, the whole lot. I can't go on anymore. And nobody knows we even exist.
No, because we think when we're in that place, the interesting thing for me was that I thought I was the only person who was feeling that. I had no idea that anyone else felt that way, because no one ever talked about it. Well, they do now, of course. And now, you know, communities like mine, we get to find out. But I had no idea of that. I could only see people who seemed to be 100% happy with their drinking, no problem whatsoever, or so it seemed. And then, you know, very occasionally you'd come across someone who was clearly not okay and clearly needed rehab. But that whole spectrum, that whole grey area drinker, I didn't know anybody else. I didn't know anyone who suffered, because nobody was talking about it, obviously.
No, nobody was saying it. And I like you, I being Irish, I had that image of either everybody had an Auntie Mary or an Uncle Johnny who was in AA and was bitter and twisted and, you know, sat in the corner drinking sparkling and had made a holy show of the family at some point by their over drinking. And that was the whole labeling of disease. And then there was everybody else who seemed to be completely managing it. And then there were people like me who seemed to have no ability, no measure, no off switch. And no matter how many times I promised myself on a Monday with all my rules that I would not do it again, at 4 o'clock, I was in the off license. Was in that place whereby I was coming off the highway in France. We lived in France for 10 years and I would take the same exit every day. And in my head, I was doing calculations about why, what we had, what we didn't have, what the whole lot. And I started to go to different shops and I still didn't question my drinking. It still took me another 5 years before I went online and found a course. I was taking an exit going, I can't go there because I went there on Tuesday. So I need to go over there. Nobody knew. I didn't look it. I wasn't down an alleyway. And I walked into Kate's online sober school with a loving husband who loved me and I loved him. 3 children who were still washed and attending education and fully in the grips of normal life, and a dog and a job. I didn't tick any box that any survey would have asked that would have made me somebody who needed help.
No, absolutely. That's exactly it, isn't it?
Yes. Exactly, I firmly believe if I hadn't gone in there, I was on a road not just to rehab, far worse than that. I was actually going to end up, I always say that I would have been found dead on a sofa watching an episode of The Sopranos, passed out alone on a sofa in a decade from now. Because, do you know what I mean? I would have just kept on going. And it's progressive, isn't it? So if I was a bottle, I was going to be suddenly 2 bottles a night. You know, that it creeps
and also,
up
you
on
know,
you.
I mean, our bodies are, you know, in the most part, pretty you know, strong, pretty forgiving. They'll you know, we're strong and we can kind of recover from a lot, but there comes to a point where there ain't much more they can do. and when I look back, I think, my God, it's unbelievable that I was thrown clear. I mean, I was eating super well and taking fantastic supplements, and I'm hugely grateful for that, because otherwise God knows what would have happened. But there will come a point where this stuff bites you on the bum. There's no doubt about it. When you look at the level of you know, chronic illnesses, and just when you look at what changes when you stop, it's unbelievable. You know, if you look at it that way, if you see people and they go, do you know what? My asthma's gone, Or, do you know what? I don't have skin conditions anymore. My eyesight got better, for God's sake.
Me too.
I mean, you know, when you think of all the incredible things, not to mention the anxiety, and, yeah, you know, when you look at everything that gets better, you have to be thinking to yourself, oh my God, what the hell would have happened? You know, we know, as you say, you know, hormonally it's terrible. It's terrible for your gut. The people with all kinds of gut health issues, the inflammation, that, you know, there's so many things that go wrong and people get sick. They're not going to link to the alcohol. It's not as simple as everyone will get liver disease. It's not as simple as that. You're going to get a million other things that are never going to get traced back.
Yes,
to your alcohol use, because you're never bloody asked about it, almost
that's
ever.
That's the point.
No GP. I mean, I used to say it. I used to ask them if I felt brave. You probably heard me say, you know, if I felt brave, I'd say, oh, you know, I'm a bit worried about my drinking, actually. I don't really think we could just have a quick chat about it. I'm a little bit worried. And it took a lot for me to say that, a lot. And on every occasion, you know, the lovely female GP would just go, you should have a quick look. Well, you look fine. You know, how much are you drinking? Obviously, you lie. You know, well, yeah, a few glasses a night. So that's perfectly normal. Have an alcohol-free day, yeah? Oh, my God. If another person had said, have an alcohol-free day. Do not say, have an alcohol-free day to someone who has just, it's taken everything they have within them to admit that they're bloody drinking too much. Don't say, have an alcohol-free day. That's not going to happen.
I was just going to say,
you know, clearly she was drinking as well. The GP would have been drinking herself. So, of course, she didn't know what to say to me. They don't know what to say.
They don't know what to say. But you know what? There is an absolute shit show going on inside of women all over the world in health conditions that are manifesting after 20 years of drinking alcohol.
Well, depression, for starters, as we say. Look at the level of people on antidepressants and HRT. You know, so a lot of women find that when they stop drinking, their menopausal symptoms completely level out.
That's
it's
right.
It's absolutely incredible. Don't everybody write to me and have a fit. I'm not saying no one should have medication. I'm not saying that. But I do think start from a level playing field rather than put medication on top of medication. Start with right?
Yes, and I also think that when we remove alcohol, our bodies internally take time to recalibrate.
Absolutely.
And we have
need
to,
a bunch of
we
time, yeah,
actually need that time for it to recalibrate, yeah, and then assess a year from now,
exactly,
as opposed to throwing in the medication on top of it. Because, you know, what you said earlier as well is life gets lifey, right? We don't need to medicate it. There's this false misconception that, you know, life is fair and life is even and life is fabulous. And no. You know, fair isn't even and even isn't fair. So here's the deal. Life gets lifey, work gets challenging, husbands annoy us, kids fail at school, they don't tidy their bedroom. That does not mean we need to medicate.
Exactly.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we
totally
need to actually learn how to cope with life being
lifey.
We need
to know how to manage our emotions, don't we, really? That's the
it.
Bit we're not taught in school.
That's,
you know,
it. And we
and
drink
from a very early
our
age,
emotions.
We just numb it all out. Totally. Well, it sounds like we're in the same place.
We are in the same place, darling. I think we're very like-minded.
So tell us how the MAG came about then. What was your decision to, was your background in, did you do publishing and stuff? Or did you just suddenly think, you know,
oh,
what,
bless.
I think I'm going to be a publisher.
No, honest to God, no, never. At any point have I done anything ever like this, but I got to be in my bonnet. And I kind of felt, at the end of the day, I felt that if I could go and get a magazine on gardening, if I can get a magazine on wine, if I can get a magazine on food, and if I have an ability after 30 years of communication to actually take a photograph and make something of it or take a message and shape it in a particular way, if I've done that for gin and vodka and everything else in the bloody hell, well, maybe, just maybe, if in the evening time as my passion project I do this, maybe I could do a magazine that would be inspiring, motivational, colourful, and bring together, I think, for me, what was important as well is a coalition of powerful voices, you know, because there's some pretty bloody amazing women in the sober space, and I'm all about women. And so I kind of felt they've nowhere to go. They're all disparate. They're all fabulous individually on their own platforms. Can I create a conveyor belt whereby I can bring these voices together so that a woman new to sobriety, or indeed somebody decades in, can find a magazine that looks like Marie Claire, find a magazine that makes her feel proud to be sober. I wanted it, it sounds really shallow, but I wanted it to look good. Do you know what I'm saying?
And it does. It really does.
I wanted it to pop. You know, I didn't want it to be sort of, here we go, and now we'll all sit and we'll meditate in the corner and we'll think of our sobriety. I wanted it to be joyful, inspirational. I wanted it to be, if you like, a digital message to the world that we're powerful and strong. We're unashamed, we're bold, we're courageous. We cook, we garden, we have interests and crafts and hobbies. We're exactly like you. We can drink anything in the world as long as it's alcohol free.
Exactly.
That's who we are.
I love the fact that you've, you know, I mean, well, the mag is just fabulous, as I say, and you've got some stuff in there that I absolutely love, and you, and optimum health and well-being and all the stuff that, that's my absolute passion. But you've also got poetry, which is an unusual little twist. What was the idea behind that?
The reasoning behind that is I find, and I don't know if you've come across it in your club, but there is a wealth of talent in sobriety.
Absolutely. I have actually. And there's got a few members who've written some lovely poems.
There you go. And there's a wealth of talent that don't have an outlet for their creativity. And I believe everybody has the right to have a voice. And if you write a poem that, you know, if you can imagine, takes courage to send to me, takes real courage to put on a page and take ownership of those words, I want to give them a space for that. And I encourage that because I believe, you know, we come into sobriety and we have these hours in the day, we have this energy, and let's funnel it down pathways that are not all about sobriety, but about creativity and, and other, because we're living, breathing women with lots of things in our world. That's why I have poetry, because I do believe that it reaches certain people. And I'm somebody, you know, I think that I love poetry, and sometimes I'm not a lofty reader in any way. I'm very much, I'm a Marion Keyes fan. I'm one of her major Supergirl fans for as long as I can remember. And I loved Maeve Binchy. So it's not that I'm reading Tolstoy's War and Peace, but I do believe that poetry has a beautiful rhythm to it. And sometimes the cadence actually of the words can actually be emotional to read. Do you know what I mean? And I want someone to read that and go, oh God, I felt that. You know, that's the kind of feeling I want a woman to have. And sometimes you reach women in different ways. Sometimes we'll reach them with the kitchen recipes, and sometimes we'll reach them through Anne Dowsett Johnson. And sometimes there's a woman out there and she's going to read one bloody poem, 10 lines, and she's going to go, crikeys, that's me.
Exactly.
That's why
it's lovely. It's really relatable. It's fantastic stuff. So just tell us about the mechanics of it. Where do we read it? How often are the issues and all of that?
So the magic of Ola Sober is that it's online, it's digital. And here's the most important thing. It's free. So
I know. How on earth do you do that?
Okay. So if you like, I'm on a mission, darling. I'm on a mission. Some people, you know, they donate to animal rescue, and some people donate to breast cancer, and some people donate to climate change. Okay. So my family, we believe that, you know, sometimes an image or a magazine or an email can reach a woman, and it can change that woman's trajectory, and it can change that family's future. Yeah. And sobriety is a generational gift. I'm giving it to my children. You're giving it to your children, and they're giving it to their children. Okay. Because we're making sure that we're not being complete lunatics with bottles of wine in us. So this is our thing. Do you know?
Your labor of love. Well, like this podcast.
This is our labor of love.
I haven't taken a week off this podcast in 2.5 years.
That's the point. This is that you understand.
As you say, if it changes one person's life, if one person tunes in and goes, oh my God, that's me. What she's talking about, that's me.
And that brilliant. For me, it's about the inclusivity. That the look and feel of the magazine is about saying to that woman out there in the kitchen, you know what, we were like you. And you know what? this is fabulous, and don't be afraid, and dive right in and read an article. So it's digital, it's online on the website, olasober.com. It comes out every month, and I also do a Sunday magazine for those that want it in the daily email. So Sunday magazine is small. The reason I do Sunday is that my mum, I lost my mum in January, life gets lifey. And my mom, my dad would buy the Times, and mom would read the magazine. And she'd always say, it takes a week to read it. And then she would come out with something fabulous. You know what I mean? She'd say, I saw on the fashion notes that mustard is the color of the season. So therefore, I have this feeling since she went in January that Sunday mornings with a cup of coffee, I wanted to just do something small. And there's a bit of makeup and a bit of fashion and a bit of inspiration in there. And it's purely, it's really in honor of my mom, who didn't have our thing. But she instilled in me a love of magazines. She was a woman who got Woman's and Woman's Own every week forever. Yeah.
Well, I mean, what an absolute joy to be able to look through a woman's magazine and have all the stuff that, as you mentioned, you know, you've got your recipes and your gardening and your create, you know, your creative stuff and your products, you know, and shopping stuff and makeup and beauty and et cetera, and stuff about meditation and on and on and on without your bloody ads for booze.
Yeah.
I mean, thank God for that. Seriously.
But that's why
it's all about positive sobriety. That's what I love about it. I just love it. You're a real star. I'm so impressed. Honestly, I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I was so impressed. I swear to God, I've done this. I've done it in my head, right?
But
I mean,
I kind of
do a lot of that stuff in the sober
you
club.
You do.
That's what we do. But you've literally made it look amazing. You must be a great designer. How clever are you?
But you know what? Can I tell you? I dropped out of college after the first term. I am a classic college dropout. Honestly, left after one term, said to my parents, can't do this. And went and got a job and rose the ranks in the industries. And here's the point. I think that I have an instinct. And I've never done it before. And I was willing to give it a shot. Yeah. And I think that's sobriety.
Because being sober makes you brave, right?
That's it. I stuck my head above the parapet. And I think the other joyful thing, and I think this is where I'm lucky, I think where you're lucky, is that I do this stuff from a good place.
Yeah.
Right? And I send it out into the universe. And I leave it there. Do you understand? I'm not. So in other words, the magic of not having ads for alcohol and all of that stuff is I want a woman to be uninterrupted in inspiration, joy, colour. I don't want her getting slammed by one of those memes.
I've literally just had this conversation recently with this podcast where, you know, I'm kind of being offered, you know, relatively big bucks.
I can imagine.
Because, you know, I've got a lot of listeners now. And it would mean, you know, literally, you know, you're halfway through a in-depth conversation like this about you waking up at 3 a.m. and then you get a bloody ad for a mattress or something. It's like, I don't think so. So
and it's
totally
also,
get it.
you're maintaining, and this is another thing in sobriety, you and I have editorial control.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Nobody tells Ola Sober what they can and they can't
say. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Nobody. And nobody tells you what you can and you can't say on your podcast
absolutely
until you want to speak to. And that's powerful. Right?
Well,
that's
very
magic.
Powerful. Particularly recently, you know, when it feels to me like the whole goddamn media has been controlled for years, you know, and there's only so much they can say. And the amount of stuff that's censored everywhere. So you're right. Having ownership of that is amazing.
As women, see, here's what I think. As women, you know, we found our power back. Okay, we've taken it back. We're holding it strong. Sometimes there are those of us who can do a little bit more.
Yeah.
And when we can do a little bit more, we should do a little bit more.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that then, you doing what you do. And me doing my little piece over here, we're making sure that other women can recover in the quiet and they don't have to do it out loud. Yeah. So we can do our little song and dance routine, add to the conversation. Actually, let me retract that. No. Not add to the conversation. We want to direct the conversation. We want to direct the conversation to society head on. That's where I want to go with Ola Sober magazine. I want to go toe to toe. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to go toe to toe. That's why I wanted us to look like a good magazine. There, you know, we laugh in this house. The photo editors, and everybody should have one like this. It's my 19-year-old son. Mm. I don't know if you've ever met a 19-year-old. They go, no, don't like it. Yeah, that's good. But they're as honest as hell, right?
Mm. Yeah, so my son does my edits and stuff. And yeah, that's what I mean. Exactly the same. Yeah.
He goes, no, that's terrible. Take it out. That one's lovely, ma'am. Leave that. Right. But there's an honesty and a truth in that, okay, that I respect and I listen to. Mm. And I would like Ola Sober to be toe-to-toe with whatever magazine is out there, standing proud digitally online, saying, yeah, we're over here. No. Yes, the front cover is bold and exciting because it bloody should be, because that's who we are in sobriety.
Yeah.
You know, we're not like this, you know, not like cowering in a corner.
Exactly. I must just ask you, you're in Spain. What's the kind of scene there, as it were? You know, is there a lot of sober stuff going on there?
So in terms of Spain, first of all, let me tell you, the zero market is fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. That's in good. Fact, Spain was
are
one
of
the first.
Are they up to speed with the, I mean, I know they were with things like alcohol-free beers, but are they up to speed with the other stuff?
In terms of alcohol-free beers, you're absolutely right. It's number one market, I believe, in Europe. In terms of sobriety, it is not discussed. In fact, my husband, who is from Barcelona, so as they say, I'm married to a native, he doesn't even think that AA exists within the Spanish-speaking culture. Alcohol and alcoholism, over-drinking, grey area drinking, not discussed here. Just not discussed. I am like an island nation, if you know what I'm saying.
So when you say not discussed, do you mean because it's not going on? Are you saying people are not over-drinking?
I don't believe they are over-drinking. Right. I do believe that the women, that I'm talking about women professionally that I've met and everything, they were not doing what I was doing. And since I've come out as doing what I'm doing, no Spanish woman has said to me, I was doing the same.
That's interesting. So therefore, that's very interesting.
It is. I think they have a different attitude to alcohol in France and Spain than we do in Ireland, England, and the US.
That. I've heard people they say do. That, yeah.
They do food with alcohol. In Ireland, we just did alcohol.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You didn't need food to have a drink in Ireland, or England, or America, or Canada. But in France, you eat with your alcohol. And the same here in Spain, it's very much around, well, certainly is within our circle, it's around food. And if they're having a tapa, they're having a small glass of wine and then they move on. And then they will have a coffee. You know what I mean? Whereas me, back in the day, if I had a tapa and a glass of wine, well, the next place I went to, I had a glass of wine as well. And then the next place I had a glass of wine as well.
Yeah.
And then we came home. Whereas they will have a glass of wine and then they'll have Musto, which is non-alcoholic, or they'll have coffee. Right. I could never understand that, if you like, culture of female drinking. Yeah. They did not drink like I did. And I certainly know that mine at home being a secret, when I started to tell people, which I did very early on, started to tell people that I'd been to sober school and I was absolutely knocking this on the head, I think partly for accountability as well, that I almost waited for them to go, I'm exactly the same. They didn't. Not one Spanish woman said to me, I do the same. Now, whether they are or not, I can't say to you. But in that my experience, they drink differently. But I do think that it's because they were raised around alcohol in a different way. I think in Ireland, England, and the USA and Canada, it was a rite of passage, you know, to go out and not just have a drink, but getting drunk was normal.
Yeah,
for young
people. Absolutely. Yeah.
Not here. And I have here, I have a 19-year-old and a 21-and-a-half-year-old. My elder son is, well, he's 30 and he lives in Paris. But the two younger, they're in university, right? So, and they're half Spanish. So therefore, you know, I see them and their friends too. And I don't see it. I don't see
interesting
what I grew up around at home in Ireland, and what women have told me was their journey in university and college and all of that. I don't see them doing it.
Changing subject slightly, but it just made me think of it. Did you see recently that news story about Japan, how Japan, the government in Japan are encouraging young people
for the economy?
For the economy, because they're losing tax revenue. What the actual, and actually setting up a competition for to encourage 20 to 30 year olds to drink more. I mean, who would have even thought that, I mean, at least they're open about it. I mean, because I'm guessing it's what we're doing here in the UK as well, but undercover. But somebody, a guy I know said he used to live in Japan and said the culture there is, it's unbelievable. In the business areas, the businessmen, they get totally hammered, even though they're quite a healthy nation and they're very clued in around nutrition and stuff. But when it comes to booze, totally lose it, particularly in the kind of high-end business world.
I was going to say premium. In the premium sector, Japanese drink like fish. Yeah.
So the young people are clearly not drinking enough for the government to get their revenue. What the hell? But as I was shocked. They're open about it. In the UK, I would imagine exactly the same stuff's going down. I mean, look at all the stuff that's been going on in government with, you know, with the Partygate, the hell.
That made me so sad.
Yeah, but that whole Partygate thing, you know, let's talk about the real issue, that they've got subsidised goddamn booze constantly at work. How would you even think that that's normal? How can that possibly be normal?
Let alone whether there's
a bloody lockdown. You should not be drinking at work. You know, subsidised.
and here's the point. Our voice, your voice is particularly very, very important because you do have a platform, you do have a profile, and your voice is really critically important. So we need to be not afraid to engage in this. So the point is that, first of all, alcohol and work should not be in any sentence.
Any capacity. I mean, none of us want our train driver to be drinking, for God's sake, or our cab driver, or our school teacher, or our doctor. So why is it okay if our government officials are? It's incredible.
Your government failed the entire UK and Great Britain population by Partygate, in my opinion, because they sent out a message that actually said alcohol and critical decision making should happen at the same time. And that is dangerous thinking. If that's the subliminal message of any government, irrespective of politics or colour of politics, that is dangerous, because culture and society is going, well, it's fine for them. If Boris and them are drinking a number 10, we're good to go. Exactly. So, you know, here we are, this company over here, and we can bring drinks in a Friday. And let's be honest, it's not just any UK government. Many of the major social Facebooks, Googles, all of them have had Heineken Fridays and all kinds of things going on in major, major companies. Yeah. And so alcohol and business have been synonymous together. Yeah, and the truth is, it's not only dangerous, but it is also medically an explosive ticking bomb that within a decade and a half will go off within the NHS and the Irish healthcare system and everywhere else, because alcohol, when we step back from everything, it's a toxin. Exactly. It's a chemical toxin going into our bodies. Exactly. It is an addictive substance that tears families apart, destroys generation of fabulous, amazing women that are leaders in their family, falling prey down the neck of a bottle, who will shape children who are absolutely emotionally hammered because they were raised by a mother in height of addiction. Yeah. And, you know, the fallout from the crystal goblet that we all speak about is immense. And at the end of the day, it goes in one direction. It does lead to rehab. It does lead to premature death. And it does lead to people taking their own life. And people are afraid to say that. But that's the reality of where it goes. So when governments start drinking in the open air public and becomes Partygate, it actually diminishes the danger of what actually unfolded at that stage.
100%. 100%. You know, the fact that the off licenses were left open during lockdown, but gyms were closed. I mean, don't even get me started. You know, the amount of people that started drinking more.
An analyst said to me when I questioned that, And an analyst said to me, an analyst that I would actually quite respect, who does an awful lot of corporate work, said, well, that was to control the masses. And I said, sorry, excuse me. He said, well, that was to control the masses.
Let's keep them nicely numbed. Because he said,
if you removed alcohol from the framework, society could fall prey to all kinds of craziness. Therefore, keep the drug into, you know what I mean? Keep it going. Yeah. Keep them happy. Yeah. Keep them tipsy. Keep them whatever. Yeah. Numbed out, zoned out, medicated. Keep them flatline.
Yeah.
They can be controlled. And that's an interesting concept, because when we go back to the beginning of our conversation, and we know we as women were targeted, we know we rendered ourselves powerless.
We
are easily controlled as women when we're drunk in the kitchen.
Absolutely.
We're drunk, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you go into work, numbed by antidepressants.
That's it.
Which they would like to pile in as well.
You see, but that's the point. This is a form of, as crazy as it sounds, it's a form of control that we lose our voice. Totally. We lose the ability to cope with life being lifey. We lose our ability to talk back, to push back on boundaries. Yeah. And if women could understand that by not drinking, we actually enter into a phase of our life, a chapter of our life, whereby we can make bloody good decisions. We make informed decisions. We're better mothers. We're better parents. We're better sisters. We're better everything. I don't know about you, but I'm 10 times calmer, nicer,
absolutely,
more thoughtful 100%. Human being.
Definitely.
Less reactive, you know, less 100%. Reactive.
Yeah.
I'm able to actually
become more resilient as well. So as you say, when life gets tough, you're more resilient to be able to deal with it.
We do the next right thing, don't we? We learned that in alcohol-free living. So for me, every day I do this. I get up in the morning and I wrote this Ola Sober Pledge that I say every day because I believe in ancestors. I believe in all of the candles. Yes, I am. I went all woo-woo that way when I put down the alcohol-free glass. And I look at, you know, I look at my forebears, and I'm from a very strong line of Irish women who didn't have our thing. So therefore, I call on them every morning and I say, listen, you know, ladies, on we go into the world and let's take it on. Cool. And I light a candle and I read this pledge that I wrote for myself, you know, and I talk about, you know, we are heirs to that revolution, because I need to believe that we need to believe as women that we're part of a wind of change. Because you and I could sit and read the newspaper and Downing Street and Partygate, and you could become very, very, very discontent, and you could become very, very sort of almost a shit. What's the point?
No, you know, 100%. I mean, you know, I think an awful lot of people went through that in lockdown. I put a few pieces out in the Sober Club where I was just encouraging people to just, I created a little meditation that was actually called Change the Channel. So you get that concept of, you know, number one, do not wake up in the morning and go on your goddamn phone or read the newspaper. You go within first before you start doom scrolling, you know.
That's it.
And over that lockdown period, there was nothing, not one piece of good news anywhere ever. It was literally doom scrolling. And for anyone who was already anxious, my God, you literally switching on the TV, the radio, opening a newspaper, the game is up. And no wonder people were reaching for the bottle. So I love the idea of your mantra in the morning, you know.
I do the Ola Sober Pledge and I send it to you. And I genuinely, I love what you said, go inwards. You know, we need to take that pause, right? As women, we do need to connect to Mother Earth. We do need to take that pause. It is about the empowerment. And I read my pledge. I light my candle. I do call on my ancestors. I don't give a shit whether anybody thinks that's crazy or not. That's what I do. That's my jam. And I do that in the morning. And that's how I kickstart my day. And I do that as well, because that is my sober intention, because I know addiction is a beast. People are afraid to say it. It's a beast. It's an absolute beast. And if women don't take control of in the gray drinking, if they don't stand in the truth space, if they don't go to you at the Sober Club, join it, listen, read your stuff, read my magazine, if they don't do that, they are only going in the bad direction. Because I don't believe that. Andessa Johnson says a beautiful thing, and I often quote her. She says that wine is the modern day woman's steroid. In an over complex world, it helps her do the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it, right? We're in a complex world. We've got many roles to play. So we reach for the wine bottle. Whereas we're saying, and I'm saying, you're saying, no. We used to do that. We don't live there anymore. Exactly. This is how we kickstart our day. You know, we're in community and in connection with powerful women, which is why in the magazine, I love when a woman says to me, oh, I do. One of my lovely women in England, Maria, said to me a couple of months ago, I do cold water swimming in the, I don't know, up. She lives up by Newcastle. I said, fantastic. Write about it.
Yeah, exactly.
So she wrote about it, gave me fabulous pictures of herself and her friends, all wrapped up. It was bloody freezing. It was like November, but I loved it. She'd never done it before. But being sober on a Saturday opened up a world to her that didn't exist while she was drinking, because it was condensed down into hungover Saturday morning, try and do as little as possible and get away with it to kick off, start again, maybe 4 o'clock, go for a beer and start doing it all over again. So suddenly she's cold water swimming or whatever they call it.
Suddenly there's space in your life to try new things. And I, one of the podcasts I did recently, I was talking about how, you know, how powerful it is to surprise yourself. You know, like kids are surprised all the time, aren't they? Everything is new. Every single thing is new and they stay surprised all the time. And as adults, you know, you get into the adulting thing and then we're never bloody surprised about anything. It's just the mortgage payments and everything else. And if we can remind ourselves to be surprised, whether that is jumping in a puddle or cold water swimming or being brave enough to try something new.
It is the joy, and being surprised is exactly it. I'm 55, right? And I want to always be curious, because it was curiosity that led me to do Always Sober magazine. It was curiosity that led me to look into software. How could I do this? How could I create a magazine? What software did I need to upload it to? How would I? Genuinely, I did the bloody website. I've never done a website before.
Wow, you know that's so impressive. So,
but
brilliant.
That's curiosity. And that's part of sobriety.
Exactly,
I wasn't
100%.
I don't know about you, but, you know, standing in the grey, curiosity was not my bedfellow. I was bloody deep down inside miserable.
Yeah, I was very, very, very negative. Yeah. And I had no concept of how I could possibly get out of it.
No
idea.
I didn't know. And I also didn't
know. And I was terrified of
getting
older.
Drinking was not an option.
Exactly. I was terrified of getting older. Absolutely terrified. I could not see any beauty in that at all. I just knew everything was going south. Everything was getting more miserable. I was going to get more, you know, grey and sick and fat and old and just every single thing. I couldn't find any joy. And that really scares me now when I look back. It really scares me. And I was lucky. You know, I was lucky. I had people around me. I was relatively healthy. God knows what it would have been like if I hadn't have been, but I really got that sense of what real heavy, I wouldn't call it exactly depression, but a real heaviness and absolutely nothing to look forward to.
That was it.
Very scared of aging. Very scared.
Yeah, I was in that space whereby I just felt, is this it? You know, that space, is this it? And looking around in the kitchen and my children and my husband and my life.
But nobody said to me, you know what, you can feel great, just ditch the booze. You know, nobody says that. Nobody says, wow, look, you know, do you realize how freaking fantastic this life could be? No, nobody says that. They just go, oh, well, have you got a problem? Oh, poor you. Well, you know, have an alcohol-free day, yeah?
I mean, when I hear that, you know, something inside of me, you know, dies, and it drives me further to do what I do, because, you know, have an alcohol-free day. You and I both know that A would never have happened, and B, that's not the answer for anybody to give us when we're sitting in their surgery.
How about every day being an alcohol-free day? Now that's when you start living, right?
and that's why I suppose there's a part of me that sort of feels that if we have a mainstream magazine and we podcast and we have all of these things and we become mainstream as opposed to uniquely different.
Yeah.
God love them. They're, you know, I read online the other day, somebody saying these alcohol free people, they really piss me off. There's so much energy and gratitude, right? So,
really, great. I want to piss people off.
And I felt exactly that. So I just sort of felt, okay, well, then we're doing our job, because you actually sound
100%.
Really grey, and you're in that space where I was. Is this it?
Exactly.
And one of the other magical things, if we say, you know, is this it? And then if we want to remain curious and stay surprised, sobriety also gives us the gift of being able to say, not this.
Yeah.
So not this means we don't know what all the answers are. We don't know where we're going. We don't know what we're doing. We don't know what's going to happen next Tuesday. But we do know not this. We know whatever we're doing, it's not this. And the curiosity keeps driving us forward to, you know what I mean, to come together in community and connection. And I think one of the most magical things for me in sobriety is that I always draw the comparison that my grandmother was a redhead. A lot of my cousins are redhead. And then, of course, I was that cliche that I went blonde, and I was blonde for many, many years. And when I gave up at blonde, obviously, natural highlighted within an inch of my life. And when I gave up alcohol, I said, I was about 6 months in, I went, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go red. There was something in me that wanted to reclaim all, you know, that earlier youthful effervescent part of me that alcohol absolutely smashed and almost dulled permanently. And I went back and I got my hair stripped back and I went red and I went auburn, that lovely sort of, you know, auburn, lovely sort of classy color. And then the pandemic came and all hairdressers were closed. And I bought Revlon 666 online, went the mad red color and loved it. And I've been that ever since, which I wouldn't have had the balls of the courage to do while drinking, because you're too busy trying to, you know, fit in, if you know what I'm saying.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas now, sobriety gives you a full 3D color and belief in yourself that you didn't have before.
Exactly.
So I can stand tall with my Revlon 666, which is a free ad for Revlon. But it is. That's the one I do. You know what I mean? And my hairdresser here in Madrid, I adore him, Shimada. He always says to me, I'm not going to touch the color, I'll do the cut. So we have this fantastic thing. He cuts and I color out of a box at home. It's wonderful. Wonderful.
We're going to have to stop talking. We've been nattering for absolutely ages. You'll have to come back. I'm sure we've got lots more to talk about. But I love you. I love the mag. I love the work you're doing. I'm really looking forward to writing for you. I'm definitely going to. You won't be able to get rid of me.
I am so excited.
I'll be there.
I'm so excited. I think that do you know what? To be honest, for someone like me, trying to put together this coalition of powerful women, to you join and actually deign us fit myself and my computer. I'm really excited about, you know, giving you that platform to say what you want to say and bring people to your club and galvanize even more positivity. And I think there's some gorgeous writers in there, and you're honestly, I'm really chuffed and I'm really excited about what you can do at Ola Sober. I really
good
am.
Fantastic. Well, I'll put the link in show notes, obviously, and we'll do it all again. We'll chat again.
We shall
Thank
indeed.
You so
it's been
much.
A pleasure.
I really appreciate it.
So look out for the new mag that comes out on Sunday. It is free. What incredible work she's doing. I'm so thrilled to be a little tiny part of it now, offering articles and columns to Susan. So that next one comes out on Sunday. Make sure you get a copy of that and make sure you stay connected. And I'll definitely be having more chats with Susan, without a doubt. And just to reiterate, by the way, if for whatever reason you tuned in halfway through, we did record that a week ago. So it was before the Queen's passing, in case you're thinking, oh, they're having a jolly chat on such a mournful day. Anyways, I really hope you have a good week, and whatever this news means for you, you know, take some time out to do some reflection. It's always a good thing to do. And as I said at the beginning of the podcast, try not to get caught up in the drama of everyone talking about booze, because the minute we talk about funerals, the minute we talk about bank holidays, oh, that somehow is synonymous with drinking. Well, it doesn't have to be. And as Susan said in that piece, getting some support is everything. She was explaining that she worked through a course. Don't forget, we've got a course called Get the Buzz Without the Booze that is included in our Sober Club membership. You do get videos sent to you. You get a whole workbook. You can work through it at your own pace. And of course, if you want the connection piece, you know, we offer that too. So check it out, thesoberclub.com. It's very low cost. Get yourself connected, whichever way round you choose to do it. It's so important. It really is critically important that we just meet like-minded people and we share how we're doing. And in the Sober Club this week, there's been posts about just about everything, you know, because as I've said so many times, it's so much more than just not drinking. Of course, that's what underpins it all. That's the foundational piece. But once we start to do that, we uncover other things. We, you know, the good and the bad and the ugly, actually, if the truth be told, because sometimes we've been masking physical symptoms and physical things that we've just been putting off and putting off. That's literally been me. I've been putting off dental stuff for so long. It's utterly ridiculous. And when I finally stopped drinking, I was able to kind of deal with some of it. Even then, I still procrastinate. It's still been ages. But we do. We sometimes, once we stop drinking, we uncover some other things that really need to be addressed. And we start to feel more resilient to deal with what we need to deal with. And obviously, on the emotional side, there's a huge amount of kind of resetting to be done. And sometimes, if we can share some of that with other people, they've been there, done it, got the T-shirt. And there's a real blessing in that, being able to share what's going on for us and share how we're feeling emotionally and just ask, you know, is this normal? Is this kind of how you felt? You know, I haven't slept in ages, or I've got leg cramps, or I'm feeling really weepy for no good reason. Is it normal? Well, yes, it probably is. But it's really good to have that confirmed by people who are going through the same thing or have been through the same thing and have come out the other side. Now they can inspire you. And that's what's just so amazing, is to feel that inspiration and feel that connection with other people who've kind of got there. They've got to where you want to be and now they're moving on again, right? So, I can't stress enough the importance of connection. If you are feeling quite lonely, if you're on your own with all of this, drop me a message. Tell somebody. It's really important to tell somebody. And my very last shout out for the Sober Coach Training Programme, by the way, which we kick off our programme September 30th. With 2 days in person, but it can be done online, followed by 5-6 weeks online and ongoing support. And it's a very, very comprehensive program. So if that is something that you're interested in, just drop me a message. We can have a chat. Appreciate it's not for everyone, but, you know, got to mention it here because you just never know. Might be someone who's been sober for a while now and is thinking, you know, it is time that I consolidated all of this and started finding a way to inspire others. So the more people there are who are spreading this amazing message of positive sobriety, the better. On my Talk TV interview that I was mentioning earlier, they titled it something like, "Is Sobriety Cool?" So I had to go with that kind of headline. I think the presenter probably decided it wasn't, but I decided it definitely was. The link, by the way, if you go to thesoberclub.com and you click on blog, you can see the link to that TV interview if you want to watch it. Anyways, I'll see you same time next week. Have a good week. Stay connected. You're very welcome to drop me a message. You can always find me at Jane Lee Grace. See you soon. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.